Okay, today is Monday morning and it's May 23rd, 2022. And I have a number of comments to make and a very important shiur, but I just want to mention, following Rav Shvadron's advice, the Dashan Yerushalmi, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's brother-in-law, so he said, when you remember something, it's Minas Shemayim, you have to tell the story. So I can't believe what just happened. Nachum Lehm, I was complaining that Yomo is not here and Mark is not here. And I said, yeah, there's a Brit and there's a big breakfast downstairs. And it's a lot more important than helping the Rebbe give shir. So at that moment, Nachum Lehm says, but Rebbe, it's a Sudat Mitzvah. Well, let me tell you, you reminded me of something that my Rebbe, Reb Noach Bornstein, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, told me in 54. And he told the following story. Kids were out of class, they were doing mitzvah, and he says, let me tell you a story, was at the Uns getroffen in Mir, something that happened in Mir. He learned in Mir, then he learned in Brisk. He was the Brisker Rebbe's outstanding Talmud. So this kid, every other day, he's not there. So they ask him, what did you do today? He went to a Brit Milah, he went to a Pidgin HaBen. Every day he had a different Sudat Mitzvah. So the Rosh Yeshiva got angry and said to him, I'm saying it in English, but I'm living it in Yiddish. Your father sacrificed money, sent you here not to work, didn't send you to go and go with the Sudat Mitzvah, that you could do back in Schnippishtuk. He sent you here to learn. Forget about the Sudat Mitzvah. Medaf steigen and learning. So that's the answer, Nachum, to your comment.
I'm here. Sorry, I was
maybe a minute late. I said Rabbi Wiener will come, but Yomo is a loose cannon. I knew that. Okay.
I'm from Schnippishtuk, by the way. Yeah,
your grandpa. Your grandpa from Schnippishtuk. I was in Schnippishtuk in 1989. It's a suburb of Vilna, absolutely. All right, leave Schnippishtuk out. I have to tell you that I'm still shaking over what happened in Lakewood, and I'm shaking all the more, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But I want to give credit at least to the person who spoke in Lakewood that he told the truth, that Rabbi Gerelich taught it. Why you... Years ago, they showed me a Torah journal from Muncie, and in the Torah journal, either a son of Rabbi Yerucham or a grandson wrote that it's a lie that people say, my Zeder taught in YU, Chas v'Chalila, he entered YU a few times to give Musa that the boy should leave. Abe, I want to tell you, you've got to be an idiot to write that, because in the world today, I would estimate, I admit, people die, we can't help it. There must be 20,000 people alive yet who studied with Rabbi Yerucham Gerelich in Yeshiva University. So at least Rabbi Ribner mentioned that Rabbi Yerucham taught at YU. Also, he titled his lecture, Why Did the Rav Cause the Schism? I would title it, Why Did the Rosh Yeshiva Who Came to America Cause the Schism? The Rav was there first, right or wrong? The Rav got there in 1932. Why you started in 1886. So please title it correctly. The Rosh Yeshiva came in and they had a different point of view. Fine. Now, Rabbi Twesky said in his time, that was the 70s, I gather, the Rav was sitting. In my time, all I dreamt about last night were the Sheurim, and then I realized, what am I dreaming? The picture I've published at least two, three times, the picture in my office, the picture I identified everyone, the Rav is in the middle of Shia, and the Rav is standing. So you pick up yesterday's Shia, you'll understand what I'm talking about. The Rav is standing. In my time, basically, he stood. Maybe he sat down when he had to look into a Tosfos, look into a Rambam, but when he was explaining everything, he stood. But age takes its toll, and that picture of the Rav in the 1970s giving a lecture at Stern College, let me just tell you, Baruch Hashem, I have the ability to stand up when I finish here. And many times I keep on moving my feet around so the muscles shouldn't get caught in one position. Then Rabbi Twesky, as a Tona Aneinikel, David, I hope you don't mind. I love Yichus. I knew your grandfather. I know where you're coming from. He said, Tolnai Nenigal, I could have been a Rebbe too. People wanted me to become a Siddiq Rebbe, and I had a title, I had a beautiful title, the Maplewood Rebbe. It's a beautiful title, but it's not for me. I am very happy just to sit behind this microphone and share wisdom, I hope, Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, you said maybe he's referring the Rebbe was an academic and Bernard Revel graduate school. You're absolutely right. But that was a few years. That was not the Rav. In other words, now they're publishing his lectures on Moreh Nevuchim, Chakira, the notes. We spoke about it, Rabbi Blau's notes. But what Rabbi Ribner's referring to is the Shir, Shas, and Paiskim. And wow, to say that the Rav was an academic. Now, I just want to make one small correction on yesterday's defense of the Rav. Not that he needs my defense, but it's a chilul kvod haTorah. I mean, Lakewood has to be honest. You can have a Lakewood point of view from today to tomorrow, and I can explain it as good as anyone. And I feel what I wrote about the Baron Cutler, I wrote nicer than anyone ever wrote about the Baron Cutler. And I mean, I revere the Baron's memory. I write about him in Washington, and over the years I've spoken about him, told stories, etc. So the Rabbi Moshe Fuchs's father, I got from the internet, his name was Yukatio. I think I said Yecheskel, but I knew him as Rabbi Fuchs, so I'd never call him by his first name. He was to me a revered Rav, and that conversation on the bus rings in my ears until today. Now, I just want to end off my comments. What troubles me even more, and, you know, Mark, Rabbi Wiener explained to me a little part of the computer where you see Rabbi Gershon Ribner's name, press on his name, and you get his biography. And I fainted this morning. I fainted for two reasons. The Yankees lost the doubleheader to the lowly Chicago White Sox. How low we have fallen, Ribbono Shel Olam, in Yankee Stadium yet. All right, but that faint was mild. The real faint was, do you know who Rabbi Gershon Ribner is? I got his biography. I printed it out. It's right in front of me. Son-in-law of Rav Shnur Katya. His own father-in-law was a Talmud of Moriah Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dovas. I told you yesterday. And I challenge anyone to tell me my ears didn't hear right when Rav Shnur was telling me, Yechabalenge, Leren Paem, etc., etc. Okay. Now, I just want to mention, we mentioned Rav Kook, that it was in relation to the Safmadov said something, and Rav Kook said, they both said something similar, that Achshev Shenoladiti, that we're born in a certain time period. So I want to thank Dr. Bill Gvirtz, who sent me a beautiful note that he heard the Rav say this part. I probably heard it too. I heard it from the Rav a few times. But the first time I heard it, I can tell you for sure, was 1960, 59-60. It's the first time I heard it. Bill Gvirtz heard it from the Rebbe in 64 at the Yahrzeit Joshua, which he ran away from Teira Vadas, what I spoke about yesterday, to hear the Joshua. He said the Halacha Shir was on Tumat Kohen, was beyond brilliant. And that's the Teira Vadas boy describing the Rebbe Shir that year, the Yahrzeit Shir. So Bill Gvirtz writes to me that the Rav's sense of humor got the best of him, and after the Rav said over Rav Kook's vart that we're all born in a certain period because in that period we can succeed, the Rav added a joke saying, I can hear the Rav saying it in Yiddish, Yetz bin ich a big shot in America, and the audience is probably laughing, but could you imagine if I was born in the time of the Vilna Gaon, they would laugh at me if I tried to give Sheyurim back then, okay? So I love that part. And Einach Inami, that's typical, it's quintessential Moriah Rebbe. Another small connection of something I mentioned with Meir Shapiro, I love to correct myself because it shows people are listening, and I'll tell you, when I have the notes in front of me and I researched it, I don't make mistakes. But when I'm speaking extraneously and recalling, occasionally I make a mistake when I'm happy to be corrected, and Baruch Amzel, my dear student in Kew Gardens Hills, writes to me about Rav Meir Shapiro. I think I said he was an Alexander Chassid. See, I remembered he was not a Ger or a Belz, not the big Chassidus. he was a Chutka of a Chassid. Alexander and Chutka are interrelated. It's all from Grushin, so I want to correct myself. And also another a small mistake I made, my tongue slipped, I knew this, when I said that the Satmarug has two great-grandsons in the Tzva HaGanali Yisrael. It's not Rabbi Yoel. Rabbi Yoel, as we said when we did his biography, left no grandchildren. He has nothing left alive with his blood in it. His daughters died young, etc. Couldn't have children. It's his successor, Reb Moshe Teitelbaum, his nephew, will be playing Satmarug, the father of Reb Aaron and Reb Zalman. He has two grandsons in the IDF. And according to what Baruch tells me, that both of them were not religious. One of them came back, and that was the Pashkana Rebbe who had influenced them. That's the Pashkana Rebbe I've spoken about many times over the decades, I would say. He's a Rebbe today in Gilo. He's from the Rishonid dynasty. His father was Rebbe Yisrael Friedman. I told you the whole story. It's not for now. He's a nephew of the Vishnitz Rebbe, and he himself was a brigadier general in the IDF. So he had influence, and Baruch Hashem at least brought one of the nephews back, and I hope we can have the news that one day the other nephew came back, Latora Beleib Shalem. Okay. Also, when I got carried away with, and everyone gets carried away with the Yud Gimel Ikarim, so I suddenly turned it into the Satmarug. I suddenly turned it into the Yud Gimel Midah. So I accept the correction, Rabbi Dr. Mark, listening in Flatbush, corrected me, Licht, and he's absolutely right, and there was a slip of the tongue. But those who, I don't want to use a bad word, but those who are angry at the Satmarug, the Yud Gimel Ikarim turns into the Yud Gimel. In other words, how do you use that? And I don't want to comment on it. Let it stand over. Okay. Now, with Theodor Herzl, with his children, this is the story I'm quoting already from research that was done about it. And I had something right, I had something wrong. He paid a very heavy price, as I said in class, for his Zionism. His wife, his children, and there was absolutely enmity towards him because he so totally neglected his family. Now, when the Israeli government reburied him from Vienna to Israel to Jerusalem, Har Herzl, 1949, they also moved the remains of his parents from Budapest and reburied them on Mount Herzl. The ashes of his wife, who was cremated in 1907, and there Nachum Lamb was absolutely right, have been lost. And the ashes of his youngest daughter, Trudy, murdered by the Nazis, was of course lost among the myriad dead of World War II. But the bodies of Herzl's children, Pauline and Hans, were left in their graves in a cemetery in France. The Israeli government did not want to rebury them because they opposed his vision and were angry that he devoted his entire being to Zionism. Finally, in 2004, the 100th anniversary of Herzl's death, after lengthy debate, in 2007, the Israeli government reburied Pauline and Hans in Jerusalem on Mount Herzl, and I think that was a proper move. I believe I spoke about it at the time in class. One of the problems was that Hans had converted to Christianity, and Chief Rabbi, the Sephardic Chief Rabbi, Rabbi Shlomo Amar, ruled that his conversion to Christianity was a result of mental illness and not the result of a rational decision, and therefore he could be buried in Har Herzl. I have to tell you that the Gemara in Sanhedrin was Daf Mem Dalet, Yisrael Apa Pisha Chata Yisrael Hu. So it's a very amorphous concept, flexible, And I think Rabbi Amar ruled exactly as he should have, and the government did what it had to do. Now, there was one grandson left, Trudy's son, Stephen Theodore Norman, and he lived in Washington, D.C. I believe he was part of the British Embassy. I think he was an expert in economics, and he committed suicide in Washington in 1946 when he found out that almost all his blood relatives perished in the Holocaust. So, there's nothing left. And that comes back to what I said and what I'll be publishing. The fact that we're sitting here in Yerushalayim, Efrat, Beit Shemesh, we owe it all to Theodor Herzl. And you'll see what I have to say, but leave that for another time. Now, let's come back to the Satmar Rav. We're far from finished. And as I said, I want to understand Satmar. I don't want to understand opposition. Let's understand them from within. The Vayom Moshe is divided into three parts. The first part we did, and that has to do with the three oaths. And in my humble opinion, even, and I said this last week, I said it before, Nachum Lem said it, even if the entire Knesset consisted of 120 Satmar Rebbeim, it is forbidden to have sovereignty in the land of Israel before Mashiach Tzidkenu. God sent us into exile, and God will bring us back. The second part is Mitzvah Yishev Eretz Yisrael, and he has to deal with a dual problem. The Satmar Rav cannot deny that living in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Ramban, is a kiyum diota. Even according to those who don't list it as a mitzvah taseh, but it certainly is a mitzvah kiyumit. And the frum Jew, there's nothing better than grabbing another mitzvah, okay. And Eretz Yisrael, then he has to deal with what we spoke about, Hilchat Deyot, running away from apikosim, running away from a bad influence. And how do you balance it out? And this is what we've been talking about, and here he gets particularly, I would use the word nasty, very strongly opposing Agudat Yisrael. And I've said so many times, why is he bothering when I go to Israel? Because to influence Aaron Rakefet, he's not wearing a different ballpark. But I go to Israel, they look like him, they're dressed in black, there's a picture in Mariv of the mayor of, where was the great tragedy where they shot everyone up, three people killed Matsoy Yom Atzmut, Elad it's called. So the mayor is a Parish, I think his name is Yisrael Parish, but so the magazine section of Marer from this past Friday has a picture of him, the pious, long black beard, long pious. If I didn't know better, I'd say this is the Satmar Rav, what he looks like, fabulous. And, well, people who look like that and don't believe like Satmar, we got to help them, they shouldn't remain up because of him. So you saw with the Hungarian, and I remember it like yesterday, 1956, and we're pleading, we're buying out people from Hungary, we're getting people out. By the way, from Romania, one thing has to be said to the credit of Ceaușescu. I mean, they slaughtered him, they executed him, his wife. Communism is a sad story, but he all the time allowed Jews to go in Aliyah. Israel paid money. They bought out Jews, but all the time there was a small but very nice aliyah from Romania. They had a chief rabbi there, Rabbi Moshe Rosen, and Hungary and Romania, I think Romania even more than Hungary, were the most liberal, not coming in and shutting down the shuls. So in 56, they pleaded, the Jews are getting out of Hungary, come to Palestine, Israel at the time already. And the Satmar Rav was hysterical, look what they're doing, taking them to bed. He's very sharp. He says, a good Israel, we have where to house them, where to feed. They didn't even have money for one bed. They didn't have money for one meal. Okay. Then came, I ended off last week's class with a short description of the history of Agudat Yisrael. History of Agudat Yisrael is very, very fascinating. As you can understand, people don't realize it was originally planned to unite all Torah Jews. World War One broke out, and after World War One, those two decisions, Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, they decide everything. And if you believe in Jewish sovereignty before Mashiach, you are an Eisvaf, a Pushtak, an Apikoris, a bum. Call him what he wish, what you wish, but you're not a good Torah Jew. All right. It's more than 100 years later, and Natan, you can ask very simply, what happened to Eretz Yisrael? Satmar doesn't let them forget this. Their Charit doesn't let them forget. They became Reformed Jews. What can you do? Baruch Hashem. But they didn't become total good Jews. They become Mizrachiites, in my opinion. A religious Zionist is the total expression of being a good Jew in the year 2023. So he is furious. Now you have to understand the Knesiyah Gedolah, that idea today, where is the Knesiyah Gedolah expressed? Rabbi Wiener, there'll never be Knesiyah Gedolah. You heard my shiur last week. Where's it expressed today? Siyum HaShas. Every 7.5 years, they rent stadium on top of stadium all over the world. Hundreds of thousands of Jews. So it gives you strength. You see, when you're learning, when you're learning, Abe, you're learning. I'm learning. 2, 3, 5. You go to a shiur, 10 people. Zimashas, hundreds of thousands. Israel. They hire the biggest places, Teddy Stadium, Yad Eliyahu, filled to capacity. America, oh, what goes on? My nephews were there, they were freezing, it was the middle of the winter, oh my gosh. But the Chizuk, England, South Africa, Australia, it's very big. That takes the place today of the Knesiyah Gedolah. Because the Knesiyah, as I said last week, unfortunately, we Jews, two Jews that are, you know, they landed on the moon, they found two shuls already. One where you daven and one when you don't daven. And this is the reality. Nothing will change it, ad biyat Mashiach Zakenu. How Mashiach will change it? Because right away they're going to look at his kippah. So the kippah shluga, oy vey, as atzionist. Black hat, the black kippah, oy vey, as nisht atzionist. Mashiach will solve it. I can't, but Mashiach will solve it. So, but you got to remember the Knesiyah in 1954 was right after the Gates of Mofet. It's you got to put yourself in the place. The Rav, I remember the Rav was hysterical. I told you this many times. The Rav was hysterical. Satmar were demonstrating outside the Israeli consul in Manhattan. And the Rav, and I told you the story, but I just want to quote one word from the Rav. So the Rav said, the hands, the hand from the Goyim, their hands are still smeared with Jewish blood. And they're demonstrating against the state of Israel. And by the way, when I'm I have a footnote, something's publishing beyond this, what we're putting in, what my dear student Evelyn Weissman Bahar is putting into a computer form now. So I have a footnote that it's not that the Rav was in favor of drafting women into the IDF, but you don't demonstrate against Israel outside of Israel. I mean, it's a different understanding. So here you have the Agudat Yisrael, the Gates on Mothers, the survivors. Rabbi Cutler came from America, Rabbi Sassuva came from America, and you have a Knesiyah Gedolah, and you have a state of Israel. And you got to remember, with all the problems in the state of Israel, I saw the weekend alone, and there's no question how much better it is today, religious-wise, than it was 50 years ago, 60 years, and every day it gets better. And come an Aliyah, and the Knesiyah Gedolah adopted a resolution, a call to the Golah, that every Jew should come an Aliyah. And of course, you got to remember the survivors. There were people that listened, people who were willing to come an Aliyah. You didn't have a big Aliyah. It wasn't a big response. The big response comes after the Six-Day War. Six-Day War added by the Yom Kippur War, and there are reasons why. The Six-Day War made us think we're indestructible. And the Yom Kippur War gave us a message, you better come quickly, who knows how long this will last. You follow, we're far from indestructible with leaders like Moshe Dayan and Golda Meir without Shabbat and Kashrut and Tarat Mishpacha, etc. We're far from indestructible. And but still, this had a big impact, the call I could at Israel. And I actually know people, refugees who made it to America and made a little money. They did okay. There is generally a theory that survivors were able to survive the Nazis, had that ability to get ahead. They thought differently. And then they came in Aliyah. I can tell you stories on top of stories. The late 50s, there was a response to Agudat Yisrael's cry. Now, and here he comes very, very big. He says, you're talking about Aliyah. Didn't we just establish that to live, this is the Satmaruf talking, didn't we just establish to live in Israel, you have to be a tzaddik, you have to be frum, it's the greatest thing in the world, the greatest mitzvah, and you can't be influenced by your neighbors. But the call on the people to come in Aliyah, heichev shalich tov kriyad nuya, l'chol tfutzot Yisrael, Belishum tonight, Shahakol Yavol Eretz Mamish Kiktabamuk Shonim Shalatzionim. You're just like the secular Zionists. You don't give a hoot. Who comes? Mechalalei Shabbos, Ochlei Nevelet Mechreifat, Bolei Bilat Asura. Everyone in the world can come. This is a good at Yisrael. You are terrible sinners. And I have to say, this is what I say this 1,000 times over. Do we really believe in Torah? Or do we choose what's easy for us? If we really believe in Torah, how come the Haredi world, I'm using popular language, how come the Haredi world is not demonstrating every Mechallel Shabbos out of the army? What do you, it's open Gemara. What do you want there? It's a site that look, Medalit, and hey, look at the Rambam, look at Malachim, Perek Zion. Chalosh. Mi ha'yisha yarei v'rach ha'levav. Hasach v'in tefillah l'tefillah. That between the tefillah and shayah to the tefillah and shayah, she talks, no? It's happened to me. People walk by in shul and say, oh, Bokatov. And I forget, I'm in the middle of putting on tefillin. You instinctively respond, all right. Ben yishtavach liyotze, all right, I'm proud. I daven a little bit different. Let's put it this way, I've yet to say kedusha in the minyan I'm davening for the last 50 years. First days, that takes me longer to switch my name. Halavai, I hit birchat kahanim. That's all I can tell you. But most people, and how come no one says, but here, this is the Satmaruv. How do you talk like the Zionist? You should say, only from Jews are allowed to come. Only Jews who are tzaddikim. Only Jews who can withstand the terrible influence. I'm quoting him word by word. That they can come and be Shemit Torah and Mitzvot and Eretz Yisrael, they're the only ones. But Chas V'Chalila, those who are weak, those who are not observant, those who the Sitma Acher, that's the Sitma Mavusa, it's the back side of God. It is what the Satmarim all day. You have to understand Kabbalah to understand this. In Mori Rebbe Sheyur, we never met this individual. In Rabban Katlasher, we never met this individual. But the Satmaruv, the Sitra Acher, the influence, the pull, it'll destroy you. And you have the chutzpah, the nerve to say without reservation, all Jews coming on the yard, I am disappointed with Agudat Yisrael. You are sinners. You are no different than the Zionists. Okay. Now he has another. On Amud Shin Nun Dalet, the second column, the second paragraph, has a. He, and there's a big question we all have to ask. Sakmuruf. Agreed, you're a gong, you're a tzaddik. You're a chassid. What? In the Muetzet Gedolei HaTorah? They don't have ge'aydim, they don't have tzaddikim. And remember, we're talking, Agudat Yisrael was founded. Who are we talking about? The Chofetz Chaim. Reb Chaim Moisek Brzezinski. Reb Shimon Shkop. I mean, even the Sakhmurov can't negate these Gedolei Olam. The Gera Rebbe. The Alexandria Rebbe. Right, the Belzer Rebbe was not part of Agudat Yisrael. That's a different story. They were much closer to Sakhmur, to Munkach. That's why when the present Belzer Rebbe led Belz and Agudat Yisrael, there was warfare here on the streets between Satmar and Belz, warfare here, warfare in Muncie, warfare in Borough Park, etc., etc. But this is a good question. He asks it. And he quotes here, there's a famous letter from Reb Chaim Moisek Brzezinski. He quoted it before, we spoke about it in passing, I spoke about it in different classes. I'll give you a drop of background. In unity, there is strength. The Jewish people, until Mendelssohn left the ghetto, we never were challenged. There was Shabbat, there was Kashrut, Tarek Mitzvah. It doesn't mean that every Jew is a tzaddik. I've said this 1,000 times, and anyone who studies response to literature will understand exactly what I'm saying. There always were sins. It's the nature of the beast. It took me a long time to understand this, because I grew up, whatever the reasons are, I never dreamt of doing a sin. From the age of 11 on, you understand? I mean, it didn't enter my thought, my vocabulary. I spoke yesterday about the pornography and about the cigarettes. Not me, I never smoked a cigarette in my life. But I remember all my friends, some of them are Gedolei Yisrael today. Some was the Rosh Yeshiva in Chaim Berlin, etc. But this was part of being a kid. By 11, I wasn't a kid anymore. It was a result of the influence of Reb Geshen Yankelevich or Henoch Fishman. It was a very unique moment in time that a third generation American kid who until today knows Joe DiMaggio's statistics, you were exposed to a Jew who barely could speak a word of English, and he united you with me. He lifted you up from the Bronx and put you in Mir in Poland. That's what I had. So, all right. So you see, when it's not that Jews didn't sin, but they didn't change Judaism. You won't know the famous Moldov Yehuda I've quoted with the guy. An adulterous relationship with his mother-in-law, the Moldov Yehuda calls him a gon, a tabut chacham, a matmid. Oh my gosh. But they didn't change Judaism. See, that's the point. When you start to change Judaism, you come up with 1,000 different difficult questions. And they're questions that are more than local. What you decide will affect every Jew in the world. Now, I'll give you a simple example. And again, I've given so many lectures on this in great depth. But on a popular level, look. If a Jew is Machalos Shabbos, it doesn't affect another Jew. If a Jew eats Tafras, it doesn't affect another Jew. But if a Jew has an adulterous relationship and creates a mamza, and that kid later wants to marry, it affects every Jew in the world. Who can he marry with? You see, you multiply this with questions like civil marriage. Civil marriage was unheard of until modern times. Then in Austro-Hungary, you know, Enlightenment, civil marriage. Well, it's reached the point you talk about communism. Under communism, millions and millions and millions of Jews married civilly, never had a divorce. Do you need a chuppah v'kedushin to get married? Beer there is, they live together 30 days in one room, chazakah, ein adam asa bilato bilatznut, eilehem eide yichud, eilehem eide beer. I mean, you can go on and on quoting Gemaras. You now have problems. Take America. Take Australia. I told you, I had one student who was a mamzer. They couldn't solve the problem. People get mad. Reform rabbi, conservative rabbi. Today, the conservative is bad as the reform, basically. And they never got a get. And they remarry, and kids, second, I say, you see, many times the proposal was made, why can't we have an international conference of Rabbanim? Why can't we discuss this, put it to a vote, reach a conclusion? These are questions that affect all of Klal Yisrael. So these proposals were made time and again. It never got off the floor. It never got off the floor for many reasons. Some of the reasons are the very reasons we spoke about at the end of yesterday's shiur. That, you know, each Rav thinks he's a power unto himself. It's very hard to yield, to bend. And then you have different hashkafot, the Agudas HaRabbanim, the RCA, the Igud HaRabbanim today. How do you join forces? But Rav Chaim Weizer has a letter. He says something. He says, whenever there's unity, he says, it doesn't work. Why? So you organize the rabbis. But the rabbis are busy. Who runs it? You have executive directors. The executive directors run, and they're the ones that make the announcements. They're the ones that run the organization. Ultimately, the Gedolei Yisrael have no say. They're busy. They're not consulted on a day-to-day basis. And he says, I'm quoting from the letter, I'm quoting from Rabbi Yogelish quotes this. He says, in Poland, we have an organization of Rabbanim, but it's not run by the rabbis. It's run by the executive director. And this is what Rabbi Yogelish says. I know they're Gedolei Yisrael and Agudat Yisrael. I know they're Tzaddikim. I know they're Hasidim. But when you have an organization, who runs it? The executive director, his assistant, the public relations man. And this is why Aguda has gone off its path. It's not because of Reb Chaim Moshe, the Chofetz Chaim, but it's because you have an organization and the mankal, as we say in modern Hebrew, he's the boss, he makes the statements, meets the press. Now, there's a lot of truth in this, I have to tell you. There is a lot of truth. There's no question that if you follow the history of Agudat Yisrael and Israel, and Agudat Yisrael technically is supposed to be run by the Rabbanim. You can ask any historian and any newspaper reporter who runs Agudat Yisrael, and 90% will reach the conclusion that it's the people on the ground who give the rabbis their opinion. You follow? Rav Shach would call him someone. I can tell you here, I give you something from my own life that I'm writing about now, I'm revealing to the public, one of the most aggravating moments I ever had in my life. And you know what I'm talking about. When the Mossad says to me, it's the mid-80s, I'm publishing this with date, with everything, I did my research. So they say Rafal Halperin wants to get involved with demonstrations for Soviet Jewry. You know what that would have meant? We would bring out from Bnei Brak an area 100,000 from Jews. You know what the impact would have been in Russia? They would have seen clandestinely, but they would have seen, you couldn't already, it was computers and people coming in, bringing in videos. As much as it was confiscated, we got a lot in. They would have seen from Jews, assimilated Jews in Moscow. I would have said, who are they? What are they? What are we? What's our connection? These are our cousins, brothers, sisters. Oh. So, you have to understand there were rules and regulations, the Mossad, and I was empowered. I was given, they had full trust in me, and then as the boss said to me, as Aryeh Kroll said to me, you know our views, how to run it, what view, and we had an ironclad rule, never criticize communism. We're not fighting this, we're not fighting communism. we're pleading for reunification of families. I've, right, you understand me. I've spoken about this many times. Reunification was allowed by communist law. After World War II, there were Germans from Posen who were in Russia. They went back to Posen. The Poles, remember how all the Chabadnikim got out in 46, 47? Why? Because Russia, there was pressure on them. Poles ran away to Russia, let them go back. Reunification of families. Chabad came up with phony certificates that this one was born in Poland, that one was born in Poland. A miracle, because the Russians were suspicious. Now read this memoir literature. It wasn't simple. They got out. So we have to, when you demonstrate, don't start yelling they're against religion and they're against this. Reunification. Pick a topic that is, according to communist law, legal. And they can, we're not, Russia's beautiful country. Whoever wants to live there, it's fabulous. We have no complaint. But we want unification, Thailand, and we arranged families. That's what the Mossad did. Kol hakavod, another reason to say hallel and Yom Ha'atzmaut. So I meet with Rafal Halperin, and this was the mid-80s where the news was coming out. A guy named Rakefet helped publicize it, that they're from Jews in Russia, Mason Nefesh in Russia. A guy named Rakefet got a good at Israel with America involved, and now Halperin wanted to get involved. Well, the word went out what he's doing. Immediately, Rav Shach wanted advice. He knew that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was against public demonstrations, but that made Rav Shach all the more in favor, perhaps. But he knew Rabbi Teitz was it. They brought in Rabbi Teitz from America. Rabbi Teitz came in, Chas v'Chalila, to demonstrate. And Rav Shach gave the word. He already got advice. Called the whole thing off. It was a tragedy because by the mid-80s, the whole world knew that these demonstrations were shaking up the Russian government. They needed Western help. And when Ronald Reagan said to Gorbachev, whatever it was, 700 and three quarters of a million people were demonstrating, let my people go, I can't give you anything till you solve my problem, let my people go. And you know what happened afterwards. And you see, Gedolei Yisrael, but they tell you, he took advice from Rabbi Teitz. He should have gone, if you're going to take advice, to the experts on Russian Jewry, contact a guy named Rakefet. I would have put you in touch with the head of the Lapid division of the Mossad. They would have sat down with you and briefed you. Mossad was against demonstrations in the 50s, perhaps part of the 60s. But then when they saw it helped, wow. So there's a lot of truth to this, that the Balabatim are the ones that will tell the Rabbanim what to do. And therefore he says, Reb Chaim Moshe, Chafetz Chaim, Gedolei, Gedolei Yisrael, no one doubts that they're Gedolei Yisrael. But they don't have the influence. It's the Menachel Koli. It's the executive director. It's the public relations man. And this is why Agudat Yisrael has failed, has stumbled. Imagine telling Jews the common aliyah, and I'm quoting from the Sefer, where will they live? How will they make a living? Everything is dependent upon the vicious Zionist anti-religious government. Do you have the means to help them? The housing? The jobs? The panasa? How dare you say, Kamen Aliyah? And that's the attack on Agudat Yisrael. Now, page Shin Samech Bet, and here I have to tell you what the Sapmarav says. I total agreement. Many things he said, he understood beyond the average streetwalker. And the depth here, Baruch Shekivanti L'dat G'dolah. Gentlemen, my dear students listening over the world, there's a big difference between the non-religious Jew in the diaspora to the non-religious Jew in Israel. In the diaspora, no one hates religion. They're living in a big world. You can do whatever you want. My relatives, as I said, my mother came from a family of six children. She was the only one that had Jewish feeling. The only one. Others, later in life, maybe developed a little bit after the Six-Day War. There's nothing left outside of my mother's family. Nothing left. Nothing left. And the grandparents, my grandfather, my grandmother, my grandfather learned in the Lashon. My grandmother relates me to Rabbi Revel, where Calvariski relates me to the Chevroni Rosh Hashiva. My cousin, he's a Calvariski, Rav David Cohen. Sand. But you see, in America, it's very nice, you're religious. You don't affect them, you don't bother them. The state of Israel, people are choking. They want to drive to Ramat. They have a relative there. They're throwing rocks at cars on Bar Ilan Street. They want to drive here. I told you this story. It's a true story. I heard it from eyewitnesses. Because the early years of the state, a couple from Tel Aviv who survived, you know, went through hell. So they drove it to Yerushalayim on Shabbos. Had an address to visit, and they see this Jew walking with primitive Bayit Vegan. Then I still remember Bayit Vegan without sidewalks. When you were here, there were places you didn't have sidewalks yet. This whole area didn't exist. So they stopped me for directions, and he was the umption of a Rebbe, and he started to cry. And they asked, what's meant? And he said, Yidden foreign Shabbos, Jews driving Shabbos. Anyway, they stepped out of the car, and he said, leave the car. No one will, and a car was red, and they were worried. These were wealthy people, Tel Aviv. My Hasidim will watch the car. They became Shomrei Shabbos, came back to their roots. Big supporters. But you see, here you affect everyone else. Someone's driving. In America, no one's going to clear. Let the guy drive here. Someone from Flatbush, a Mechallel Shabbos, ran in the marathon. You read the news or not? They ran from Prospect Park to Coney Island. So this guy crosses the line and he drops dead in his 30s. Heat. It was a very hot Saturday. So I wondered, it has to be a guy, I figured, Brooklyn. Turned out it was a Jew, Reichman, I think the name was. You can read it, go onto the websites, go to the New York Post, go to the New York Times. Dropped dead. But, all right, a Jew is running on Shabbos. So what? Excuse me. The Jew was running on Shabbos. No one is going to yell at him, Chalos Shabbos, what are you? Do what you want, don't affect me. Here, we're interlocked. A guy wants some treif pork that they make in Russia. They can't import it. It was a decision of the Supreme Court, a miraculous decision. I don't know if you're aware. Judge Aaron Barak, for one time in his life, had seichel. They challenged the fact that to import anything to Israel has to have a hechsher, has to be approved by the rabbinate, food imports. And they challenged it in court, meat, what are you? And he ruled, and the question is this a democratic state or a Jewish state? And he said, in relation to importing Gaza, it's a Jewish state, we can't do it. Could you imagine, Baruch Hashem? But why should you, in America, a guy wants to eat chazer, a guy wants to drink who knows what. Doesn't, do what you want. I do what I want, you do what you want. This is the heart of the problem here, that this is a Jewish state, and we are not satisfied just to be Jews in private. Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Al Pi Torah Yisrael. The public thoroughfare is just as important to us as our private life. And the Sakhmarov is absolutely correct. He says, in America, they don't hate us. Here, Israel, they hate the religious Jew. The Chiloniim Haaretz. Hatred. By the way, part of the hatred is, here's a psychologist. Part of the hatred is the result of a guilt conscience. And I'll illustrate it by one true story. Abe, you know where Kikar Shabbat is? You know how it got the name Kikar Shabbat? There were tremendous demonstrations to close down traffic on Shabbos. Right at that corner, actually one Jew was killed by a motorcycle. And from the leftist kibbutzim, Jews would come on motorcycles to demonstrate there. There weren't that many cars yet in Israel. How do you shut down? It's the democracy, it's the Western world. Primitive, you know what they call it. One Jew, it's a true story, a kibbutznik from the Shomatzia kibbutz, is coming on a motorcycle, and he sees the Jews who are yelling Shabbos. And he goes back to the kibbutz, to his parents' home, and he looks at the pictures on the wall, and they're dressed exactly like those Jews yelling Shabbos. P.S. That Jew went on to become a Geula Jew, a Mea Shearim Jew. They tell me their great-grandchildren that you can't even count from that encounter. Yireim v'shleimim. But you see, some of the hatred is, that's my grandfather. That's my great-grandfather. Where do I come from? Who am I? And I have to say, I've used that time and again, very adroitly. You know, you talk to people who have, and I say, we're Jews, I say. The contemporary world, the Western world, the world of Haaretz, the world of the New York Times, lives in the present. They have no regard for the past and don't give a hoot about the future. We Torah Jews, we don't live in the present. We live in the past, planning for the future. It's very, think about what I just said. If someone has a mind, if they can rise above wine, women, and song, this is something to think about. Who are we? Where do we come from? What is the blood in our veins? What will be 100 years from now? And here the Sakharov is absolutely right. You don't find this hatred outside of Israel. In North Tel Aviv, in Haaretz, you absolutely find it. You're interfering with their lifestyle. I walk up the hill in Azza, the Chilul Shabbos is frightening. They turned it into an air for the college kids who all went rooms, bars open, sitting, drinking. I want to yell and shout, and I say, well, I'll accomplish nothing. Just get them more angry. Outreach has to be done. Tel Aviv, they're doing more and more now. But the challenge is unbelievable. And remember, these kids grow up in a school system where they have nothing. They've never learned the Pasuk Chumash with Rashi. Just think what I'm saying. You're talking Mishnah, you're talking Gemara. We at least had a choice. We learned Roman and Latin at one point. They, not even that. Today they're getting rid of Tanakh, the Bagrut. It's boring. And then you come along and you want to close roads and you don't let them have chasa and you don't want to have prostitution legalized. Understand? Right now there's not such a drive. I remember 20 years ago legalizing prostitution like Holland, like Amsterdam. Up to date, progressive, modern, liberal. The whole sanctity of marriage has been destroyed. We have a lot to say on the topic. They have no idea. Kid of 15 is sleeping around already. You see here, every other week there's an arrest of a kid of 15, 16, a girl of 14. What are you arresting? It's all permissible in the education you're giving them. And here I have to say the Satan Rav hits the nail on the head. And what he's saying in reality is, how can you bring a Jew out of Muncie, Kiryat Yoel, Square, what do they call it? Square Town.
New
Square. New Square. Out of Palm Tree. There, no one is cursing him. Here, will he be strong enough to survive the curses? And I you have to understand, this, I can tell you one little story. My wife used to drive me to the Kotel. And then she came home and she, with mechanics, she's not the greatest. And one time she didn't turn off the lights. The lights on the car were on all Shabbat. The headlight. And of course that drains the battery. And my next, a neighbor in the next building came over and said to me, why don't you turn off the lights? I said, Ani Shomer Shabbat. She looked at me like I was crazy. You know, I think she walked away and spat on the ground. What a moron, what an imbecile. All right, I have to say, Baruch Hashem, let's see if I can get myself a little bigger. Okay, Baruch Hashem, the battery started after Shabbos. I didn't have to jump in. I didn't drain it that much. But that's their mentality. In America, the water and the acid are not going to mix. Zelichud v'zelichud. And the Satmar Rav, yeah, to live in an environment like Eretz Yisrael with so much hatred and enmity, you have to be big. Only one out of a thousand. Only a tzaddik yisod olam. Outside of that, stay behind and don't plead with them to come in Aliyah. Now, beginning on the second part of page Shin Samach Bet, he makes a fascinating point. I have to tell you, part of it I agree with, part of it I cry, but it's a fascinating point. You know, I'm quoting, I'm paraphrasing him. It's not that I'm making this up, I'm just paraphrasing him. Let's go to Muncie. Let's go to Woodmere. Where did you live last? Matanya lived in interesting places.
Muncie.
Let's go to Muncie. What minion did you daven at?
Like a shtibble.
A shtibble. 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning. All right, you popped in, other people popped in. They put on talit. You don't put a talit yet, unless you're a yekka, a svardi. You should put a talit. You see, there are guys floating around here in their 40s, not married, and no talit. Okay. The rav is makpid. I think Chaim put on a talit from his bar mitzvah on. I should ask Chaim. Okay. So I want to ask you a question. They put on tefillin. They did it. Did everyone get excited? Oh, what a mitzvah I'm doing. Beautiful. All right. Shabbat. Davin, thanks, Mira's business. Someone is going to Eretz Yisrael. Oh, did they get excited. I'm visiting Eretz Yisrael. And here the Satmar Rav uses Musa language. Every other mitzvah they do, mitzvah danoshim melumeda. That's a pasuk in Nach, melumada. That we do the mitzvah out of habit, out of rote. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, every Musa Shmuis he gave, they would yell and shout, mitzvah danoshim melumada, midavin, didavin, all right, what kavana, when kavana, your mind wanders. I'll never forget, in 1951, my classmate Izzy Scheinfeld finished Mincha. We were davening Mincha in class, YU, and Reb Michal Katz says to him, Shalom Aleichem. And Izzy says, Rebbe, why you give me Shalom Aleichem? I didn't leave the room. He says, while you were davening, your mind wandered all over. And that was, he was a very bright kid. His father was an early musmach of the yeshiva in the 1920s. And he went into business, very successful, a hosiery business. And another, he says, Shalom Aleichem, he says, where was your mind? So I read with Lubavitch, these people revealing their conversations with the Lubavitch Rebbe, some businessman who the Rebbe was Makarev is telling the Rebbe, I have trouble davening, sometimes my mind wanders in Shmonesse. The Rebbe says, it happens to me too. So the kid, this businessman, when he says that, you have no idea how happy the Rebbe made me when he said it, because if it can happen to him, then Allah had come of a comet can happen to me. But ain't Achinamu, we do that. My wife and I always say, sometimes we were invited to Shabbatot with people not much older than us, not much younger, but Balei Tshuva. And you should see the Shabbat. You should see the feeling. You should see the meaning they put into it. We, want to win Shalom Aleichem, Kiddush, come on, let's eat, you follow? By the way, there's the brewer says this, he sang Shalom Aleichem in the middle of the meal because they always had poor people present, and he said, who knows how hungry they are, it's the Mishnah Brewers, the Chafetz Chaim. But you see, but when people are going to Eretz Yisrael, wow. Now, you got to remember, this was written, let's say, in the 1950s. Let's see the date he wrote down when he finished it. 1960, so Darwin's right. This was written in the end of the 50s. I have to say then, when you went to Israel, it was a very big event. There's a recording of Rav Pinchas Mordechai Tais and Elizabeth. He went to visit Israel the first time. Has to be the mid-50s. When he came back, they made him a Malava monk, and he gave a speech here, and he gave a speech there, and I listened to one of those speeches, and he describes, he says, there's nothing more natural than living Judaism in Israel. He says, I saw this delivery boy on his bike delivering Friday afternoon, his tzitzit hanging out, blowing in the wind, and no one says anything. He says, could you imagine if Elizabeth, the rough tights? And it's true. I don't know whether what the Sakhmurov is saying would apply today. Because today, Baruch Hashem, we live in Widmer. We have a second apartment in Yerushalayim. We drive our kefir crazy with questions. How many days yontif to observe when we're visiting? We're here. How many kachachach part of the year? Three chagim, two chagim, etc., etc. So I don't know what is entirely right, but there's no question that in the 50s and the 60s and into the 70s, wow, a visit to Israel. Wow. Different than Tfilin and Talit and Mezuzah and Dalud Minim and Matzah and Mara. There's also mitzvah. There's nothing, but no one gets hysterical. But, and he says, why is this? This is a result of the Zionism. We have been filled with the prey, with the poison. Eretz Yisrael, visiting Israel, what an achievement, what a place, how happy we should be. But this is not the right feeling. Halavai, every mitzvah should excite us. Visiting Israel is minor, minori, compared to all the other mitzvot asei, the oraita, v'chulu. And he says, you see how the Zionist influence has swept in to our mentality. It's part and parcel of our whole gestalt. We've been influenced by this melucha of minut and kfira, and chas v'chalila, we shouldn't rise above us and know that this is treif, puzzle. V'av shegadola ma'alav kedushat Eretz Yisrael. Yes, it's big, it's wonderful, it's kedusha, it's more kedusha than any other place in the earth. But chas v'chalila, that we shouldn't understand, because there is so much kedusha, we can't desecrate it. It's one thing in Chutz Laretz, he says, you have Avodah Zarah, you have churches, you have getlach statues in the street, but chas v'chalila in Eretz Yisrael, where you have Avodah Zarah and you have worse than that among the Jews, minut and kofrim, and not because it, it's the opposite of the kedusha, and it's a million times worse. And chas v'chalila, we should feel this mitzvah, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, is more important than anything else. And if this is the case, then he asks the question, I'm now on page Shin Samachet, and he asks an interesting question. You'll see what he develops about Achav by the time you're finished studying this part of the Yoel Moshe. You're ready to put a picture of Achav on your wall, the Kavod. He says, well, if this is the case and you had Melachim who was such Rishayim, why didn't the wonderful Jews, the Tzaddikim, the Urayim, who lived at the time of Achav and Menashe, why didn't they run away from Eretz Yisrael? Why did they still remain there? If there is so much evil, how come they didn't say, Ad Khan, we don't want to live in a land that's being desecrated and we should run away? And he says, first of all, we don't know. In order to run away, you have to have a place to run to. In other words, we all know this is part of modern life. I have no place to go. The Russians, the Jews, till they got out. Where do you run to? Today with the Ukrainians running away, the war, where do you run to? Who takes them in, etc.? But that's one answer. But he says something a lot deeper. He says, Achav, he was a tzaddik. He only did one sin. Avodah Zarah, a terrible sin. But he quotes the, you'll see the sources, he quotes the Gemara in Chulin, he kept a kosher home. Yehoshaphat ate in Achav's home. And then he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin in Chelek, how Achav had such mesirat nefesh, I'm quoting the Rabbi Yoelish now, that he was willing to give the king of Assyria all his money, all his gold, his wives, his children. He shouldn't make war. But the Sefer Torah, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that the Assyrians wanted, he refused to give to them. And Habeg Adolez Manainu Yuchlulim Mod Musa Me Achav Luchom Avur HaTorah HaKadosha B'Mesirat Nefesh Kol Kach LaHafkir Atzmo V'Chol Ashelo Avur HaTorah HaKadosha. Wow, that's pretty strong, that we gotta learn from Achav. And we have to fight the Abikrasim here. And we have to fight Haaretz. And we have to fight the Labor Party today. And the Reform Rabbi and the Chametz in the hospitals. And they would like to make the Tzvah Hagan Al Yisrael make the Kishin Strafe. You don't know what we're up against, because these people today, they're an absolute minority, but they have power. It's not like 50, 60, 70 years ago. You weren't from, but you had a feeling for Yiddishkeit. You understood Yiddishkeit. You knew where you were coming from. Yom Kippur was Yom Kippur. Chametz was Chametz. Today you're dealing with a crowd that has no knowledge, feeling, emotion whatsoever. Until you wake them up, a Torah Jew lives in the past, planning for the future. We don't live in the present. Let them think about it. It may wake them up. And he's very, the Achav turns into a hero for the Satmar Rav. And it's an open Gemara. He has the basis on what to say it, but to say it should influence us halacha l'maisa, hashkafa wise, old haderech aruka. And then he comes to Yom Ha'atzmaut. This is a famous part, widely quoted, that Yom Ha'atzmaut, you celebrate. He says, the English Sha'ech Omer Ha'avon Plili Shel Hasmechim, that those Jews who celebrate on Yom Ha'atzmaut Marim Simcha V'chag B'Yom Ha'niyotz Hanora Shekaru Oto Yom Ha'atzma'ut Shehitrastu Min Ha'atzei Hashem Hitratzvu Al Hashem V'yam Mishicho Lahamid Malchut Shel Minot Al Yisrael Ba'akirat HaTorah HaKedosha V'Ha'er Emuna. And of course, here he comes to you. It's one thing, you live in Israel, right? You had no choice, you were a survivor, you got to Israel, you have a little panasa, your kids get a good chinuch here, and yet to rejoice on Yom Ha'atzmaut, the terrible day on which the Abikosim established the state against the will of God, and established the state of ruining the Torah. And then he comes one step further, and this takes us right into modern theology, right into Rav Hutner, right into what Rav Kefet will be publishing, Be'ezrat Hashem, the state of Israel. What are you rejoicing? Zionism brought about the death of millions and millions of Jews. Who incited the Arabs, if not the Zionists? Who incited Hitler, if not the Zionists? Who rejoiced and declared, the more that Hitler will kill us, the greater the chance that we will have a Jewish state. And here he says it right there, Yom Ha'atzmaut, V'me'az, meaning when the time Zionism began, Hitchil mechadash hashvichat damim shel libo revaot mi Yisrael. And so many Jews killed. God, and this is even worse than being murdered by Avedah Zarah, that once you admit Avedah Zarah, but the Jews are still alive. But here, you are dead, so many dead, and yet the chutzpah to rejoice and this day, a day of Apikurset, Miridaba Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Ke'em Zevras Mechim B'Yom Eidam, Yom Hama V'Hanimha. That's what he calls Yom Ha'atzmaut. Harachman, Hu Yatzilenu Mehem U'Mehamonam, V'Yechazeket Lavaveinu L'Ha'ir Einenu B'Torato V'Avodato. Wow. Okay. We're at the tail end now. These are very strong words. And he goes one step further. But with all said and done, there's a reality. There are Jews living in Israel. And we have an obligation to support them. And he says, this is the biggest stucker in the world. And here we come back to what we spoke about last week and what's in the news all the time. If they have support, they don't have to turn to the government. They don't have to plead for housing. They don't have to plead for jobs. They don't have to plead for food. They will be totally independent. And he says, Al kol ze mutal aleinu lehitamed lishloch lechem kol ma deyefsha ish kemin matnat yado. ובזה ודאי אנחנו מקיימים מצוות יישוב הארץ, ששולחים המאות אחוות תורה ומצוות, Shema. And it's only given to people hamuksakim v'yomdim lalechet b'derech haTorah haEmet, the true Torah, and not to give money to the apikoshim that go out of their way, machrivim et yishuv Eretz Yisrael umetamim et haaretz v'kol alam kulo b'miut v'apikoshet rachmana letzlam. And everything they're doing is only ma'asecha sitra ma'avuta, the dark backside, the dark side of the Ribbono Shel Olam Rachmana Litzlan, and chas v'chalila to contribute, to help them. And real tzedakah to our people, our areas, there's nothing any greater. And with this, he ends off the Maimai Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And again, people will say to the Satmarov, what are you crazy? Where are you coming from? Whoever spoke like this? What did you discover? A whole new Torah? What did you have? A whole new revelation? And the Satmarov is aware of this. And he ends off, Kol HaMayayim B'Tzedek B'Piskai Dinim Shesedati B'Halachas. Whoever will look in what I've written and will look with an honest look, will not be prejudiced, intellectual honesty, they will notice, Lo chidashta dava midaiti, I did nothing on my own. Everything I have written here, I have quotes, I have support, it's not shekatafti, something that I thought up. Chas v'chalila, this is all correct. Akavela Hashem Yitbarach shemavakshei ha'met yodu al ha'emet v'yeru et asher lifneihem. And he says, I hope that those that seek the truth will read this and study it fairly, without prejudice. And they'll be smart enough not to allow the Zionists to blind their eyes, b'divrei shav v'hevel. And he adds, v'anikaveh, akaveh l'Hashem yitbarach shemavakshei ha'emet yodu al ha'emet v'yeru et asher lifneihem. And he says, I hope you'll be smart enough and big enough to be Moidala Emet. This is the way to go. And even though people will say, wait a minute, how big is Satmar? They're a minority, Zirininun. And if they're so few, how do we know that this is the truth? Avotunua achat shel emet habiba beinei Hashem yitbarach yoter mehakol. And this is the heart of the issue. I come back to something I told you last year, perhaps this year, and b'didi haviyuvta. Among my Talmidim listening are Satmars. So I'm walking in Borough Park, and there's maybe three or four Satma Hasidim walking with me, calling me Rebbe. And I asked them a simple question, the story with the Rav, which I alluded to before, and you've heard it from me many times, where we asked Rebbe after class in the mid-50s, what do you think of the Satma Hasidim demonstrating against the state of Israel? So the Rav said, I'll never forget it, bring the Rambam, and he sent the kid running up one flight of steps to the Gottesman Library. I mean, could you imagine we didn't have a full Rambam, a full Shas? It was unheard of. Today, I guess, in every classroom, you have a little library, and let alone the on the desk with the computer. So the kid comes back, and the Rav says, open up Hilchat Teshuva, and the Rav is dealing with the psak of the Rambam, that Eila Sheilim Chelek Lam Haba, among them, Haparish Min HaTzibur. And you separate from the tzibur, and the Rav reads the Rambam, and the Rav, and you see from the Rambam, it means a person is frum, and he's a shomer mitzvah, but he separates from the Jewish people. He doesn't, paraphrasing the Rambam, he doesn't rejoice when they rejoice, he doesn't suffer when they suffer, he is separating himself from the Jewish people. Natan, he said, these are the Sakhman. Separating themselves, from the Jewish people, Einlam Chelik Liolam Haba, and he was furious. So I asked the Sakhman walking with me, how do you justify this viewpoint that no other Gedolei Israel accepted? And he said, you don't understand. And I'm very thankful to them for explaining this to me. He says, you think that Tzibur is all the Jews. The Satmar Rebbe thinks that Tzibur is just those who think the way he does. Everyone else already is an apikoros. He's removed himself from Klal Yisrael. This is exactly what the Rebbe is saying here. Aval tenua achat shel emet chabiba be'enei Hashem yitbarach yoter me'hakol. Wow. One little group. That's the tzibur. They have the truth. And this is why we can't argue with Sakhman. You can argue from today to tomorrow. But if they have the point of view, you're an apikoros, you're a neisvach, you're a kaifer, you're a min. We have the truth. We're just so small. Klal Yisrael is millions. We're just 100,000, let's say. Doesn't matter. We have the truth. And from that point of view, that's why the Satmar remains Satmar. That's why in Palm Tree they remain Satmar. That's why in Williamsburg with the Reb Zalman they remain Satmar. You can't convince them otherwise. At least seemingly, we'll come to this when we finish Satma. I have a lot to say and I'll show you. There are changes on the ground. I'll show you very interesting developments. But at this point, accept what I'm saying as the explanation for the Satma Rav. Efrat?
Rosh
Tzurim. Alon Shvut.
Next to it. Yeah.
Better, a little better. Gush, what else was the word they used for this?
Gush Etzion.
Gush Etzion, right. You're not the tzibur. He's the tzibur. We're not. I mean, you have to understand that. And this is the end. Gomati HaKuntris HaZerv Shabbos Kodesh, and he gives you the exact date, 1960, Poe, Brooklyn. Wow. Okay. Where do we go from here? Give me another minute. We'll finish out the time, more or less. A story. I had a student in Michalah. I had some wonderful students over the last 62 years. And her name was Pearl Preschel at the time. Shmuel Preschel's sister, Chagai Preschel's sister. Chagai lives here in Yerushalayim. Shmuel, he was here a few months ago already. Shmuel and Pearl is today Pearl Herzog, you might know more. They live in Lakewood. So she was, for me it hurts because these were kids who were strong followers of Meir Kahana. And all right, they exchanged it for Lakewood. Eretz Yisrael could use them. So at one point she's in France, she was studying at the Sorbonne, and she came back to America, and she came back late, she needed a job, very bright girl. I believe she has a PhD from the Sorbonne, if I'm not mistaken. Her father was Rabbi Dr. Tuvia Preschel. He taught at the seminary, he was a big Talmud Chacham. Taught at the seminary, he was part of the Talmudic faculty, and as I've told you so many times, the seminary at that point considered itself orthodox. They had a problem, if not for the problem, with Kaplan, the whole history of Torah would have been different. But okay, can't go back 100 years and change what was. So she comes back and she gets a job teaching in a Beis Yaakov, I believe, in Brooklyn. If Pearl is listening, she can correct me if I have any fact wrong. And, you know, it's high school kids, noisy. And she says, Sheket. She had just come back, studied here in Mechala, etc. Sheket. A deathly silence fell over the classroom. And, wow, they looked at her, I'm tarnished. How he can speak Hebrew? Sheket's a Hebrew word. She should have said, Shash steel. Be quiet. Yiddish. I in English, shut up. Be quiet. Sheket? This is forbidden, it's forbidden. Wow. Gentlemen, the third part of the kuntres, this is the revised. You got to remember, the Yom Moshe, the original kuntres, was Shalosh Shvuot. Then he added Yishev Eretz Yisrael, and then he added Maima Lashon HaKodesh. The Satmar had a very interesting shita. You are forbidden to use Hebrew on a mundane, daily basis. It is only for davening, Kriyat HaTorah, that's it. Beyond that, and you see, Shas, what language is it written on? The Mishnah is in Hebrew, and all of the Gemara, 67 art scroll volumes, someone said to me, it's 67 volumes, I almost fainted, I said, I know 20 volumes. No, the art scroll, I think it's 67, they quoted. I think in Hebrew it's 67. I think in English it may even be slightly more. And all in Aramaic. Now, this gives us the third part that will begin next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Maima Lashon HaKodesh. I'll tell you what's very interesting in this part. He gets heavily involved with women studying Torah. So you see the influence already of what was happening in the 50s, women studying Torah. And followed, it's, and by the way, you don't even start to realize, have you read the weekend, did you read the weekend papers, Makori Shon? The whole army may be integrating with women and men together in fighting units. Where will he, has the boy be able to go? It's going to be big decisions made. And it's not a simple matter. You're dealing the progressives or the retrogressives, the old day Aveda Zara, have more influence than they do in the army than in the regular population. For one simple reason, where are the Haredim? The regular population, the Haredim today, have power. Even with this government, Kahana's limited what he can do. You see that the Sahadatot, you see that Chief Rabbi Yosef will not come to any of their meetings, and it means he cannot make any of the big reforms he's dreaming without the Chief Rabbinate's signature. The other Chief Rabbi is very busy. Lo Aleinu, his wife is critically ill. I get all the inside information from my daughter, but she's critically ill. And, but the Haredim, but if they're not in the army, there are no breaks. All right, we have religious Zionists. On this issue, there's total unanimity all the way from Har Mor to Kibbutz Adati. You understand? Here there's total unanimity. And how much influence do we have? We have some, but we sure use the Haredim on our side. So you're going to be in for a very, very interesting kuntres on Lashon HaKodesh. The heart of what I have to say comes beyond this, where I take you into contemporary times and I have you see a lot of good insight, but that may only be, we may only reach it next Zman Be'ezrat Hashem. Now next Sunday, again I stress, is very special. And he mitpaleh laKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, you're not going to understand me, and I hope you don't understand me. But it's the first time I'm teaching in the afternoon in many years already. I need koach. But I felt I wanted to do it at 3:30, not at 9 o'clock in the morning, so I can give hell to my talmidim who are in Woodmere, Muncie, Teaneck, Lawrence, etc. So we're missing Beverly Hills, but right, so there's angesund. So Sunday is a special day, Yom Yerushalayim, and I'm giving a special shiur on Yerushalayim and BMT and the messages it gave us. And there'll be a few people, a handful maybe, a little more, of families from the, we're celebrating 50 years, the 71 to 72 class. Everyone is invited. Natan, why don't you bring your parents here that day? Isn't there something big before? Gris is doing something, and there's a speaker. There's a lot going on that day. Then there's Mincha, and we're only allowed to begin after Mincha because we don't interfere with, and Mincha's 2:45. I won't be here for Mincha. I have to go out for Marv. It doesn't pay for me to walk up the steps just for Marv. I'll go Mincha Marv, and Shalom al Yisrael. I sit to 15 minutes in between, and I learn what to do. And then 3 o'clock, there's going to be a Kabbalah, a reception outside here in the hallway with some food. And at 3:30, I'll begin the shiur. Mark, I want everything set up for 3:30. So everyone's invited. You come with your wife. You can't bring from Chicago. And this gentleman has yet to find the right lady. But in Israel, you will find the right lady. The women here are on a different level. Many of them don't want to marry someone who's coming back. They are on a different level of commitment, different education. It's fought Kedushat Eretz Yisrael, you understand? Okay. So to reiterate, first of all, I want to thank everyone for honoring me with their presence. You'll have to admit the Sapnerov's attack against the good Israel is pretty strong. You can't escape it, and it's right after the Holocaust. It's Palestine. It became Israel. But he remained strong in his belief. And some of the insight of the Sapna, I mean, that part on the more hatred here, Rakefet signs up 100%. I really think he's 100% right. You have to remove any anti-Satma prejudice and give credit. The man, he was a gold. He had insight. And we struggle with that problem until today. And I can understand it. In Manhattan, in Flatbush, a guy runs on Shabbos. I mean, it's unbelievable, with a beautiful Jewish name, Reichman. Check it out. And he's running from Prospect Park, that's Chabad territory, Crown Heights, to Coney Island. And no one says boo when he drops dead. 30 years, a little over 30. I think he left a wife, children. Idiot. Why are you running? What are you mechallel Shabbos like that? And also, it's a very hot day. I hold that the organizers can be sued. How do you allow people to run? And it was at 90 degrees, and my sister-in-law called, said it was very, very hot. I mean, she doesn't realize what I'm talking about. She's living in Queens, but it was very hot. But the Sapnerov is not incorrect. Okay. We'll pick up again Be'ezrat Hashem. Sunday is not the regular shiur. But Sunday, the Sunday afterwards, I pick up with Reb Aaron Soloveitchik and then with Moshe Feinstein. You're not going to be bored. That's very fascinating. It's a very interesting question. What do you answer? And Sunday is Sunday, and I want to ask if there are any questions. And until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya, please open it to the world. Rabbi Rubin, I hope on Thursday I can drop off what I have for you. I just have to find time to be able to make that stop, because every day, like today, I'm too exhausted, but tomorrow I have this shopping, Wednesday this shopping.
The point you made at the very end, that it's Raseh Sotah, I think that one of the avelot of the Sapna Rebbe, which a person, if he studies Jewish theology, will realize, in the ancient world, in the time of the Babylonians and the Canaanim and the Sugaritim, etc., there was a belief that there was a counter god called Satan. And along comes Yahadut in the Tanakh. It says there is a Satan, but he is only an enemy of God. He's not a counter god. He's not an independent power. And this is the Jewish contribution and theology, that there is no Satan against Hashem, only Hashem Achad, the only sole power. Along comes the Satmar Rebbe and reintroduces to the world the idea of Maser Satan. This concept is something not only from the point of view of Al Tiforshman and Seymour, it's also incorrect.
Right, okay, I have to tell you, here you only meet the Satan minor league. In Alagula Vala Tumur, as we see, you meet the Satan major league. But he has sources in Kabbalah that he cites. And you can't say it's not, it's just an emulation of Christianity. He has sources. But I would paraphrase what you're saying a little bit stronger. According to Satan, everything that's happened is the Satan. Do we believe in God or don't we believe in God? The very fact that Yitzhak Rubin and Ani Rothkopf are sitting here in Yerushalayim, and remember where we first met in Bachad in New Jersey, you're from Boston, B'nai Akiva, I'm from the Bronx, B'nai Akiva, and that we're sitting here, and that how many millions of Jews are here? And every day it gets better. And that we have such little Jews from the Golan, the most powerful army in the world, the most powerful Mossad in the world. Do I have to elaborate on the news of yesterday? The whole world is shaking. Iran, etc. Wow. So I don't know. This is all of a sudden. Or is it the Ribbono Shel Olam smiling at us? And Enoch Inami, you know, in my lectures on the Holocaust, you can take the Satmar's point of view, but you can take another point of view, that the whole Holocaust is because we were rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, ruthless, heinous, depraved, degenerate, debauched, surreptitious sinners, and we refused to listen to Herzl. Halavai, the religious Jews, by the millions would have come in Aliyah in the 1880s and the 1890s, it would have been a Gan Eden here. But unfortunately, the Jew is happy. He said there was just a poster circulating on the websites, "Welcome to Teaneck." And underneath it was like an additional sign put on, "Oh, we wish we were in Israel, but you know," in three dots, "Panasa, Panasa." And the writer took Hitler to tell us what to do. And what a miracle we have here. And what a miracle when I see that picture on my door of a great-grandson, 4.5 years old, a little kid, holding a big Israeli flag that's 20 times his size and the smile on his face. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, and I celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut b'lev v'nefesh. Halavai, we can influence as many Satmars as possible to come back to total Judaism, to come back to the real Tzibur, to build Eretz Yisrael, to take the past and merge it with the future and give us a fabulous present. And this is our goal. This is what we're trying to accomplish. And by the way, I have to show you in Satmar. It's very fascinating what's happening there, but we'll talk about it when we get there in context. I don't want to be popular. I want to be totally scholarly with sources, etc. And I have what to say. New sources, just published. Just published and strengthening my own thinking. And you know how happy I am when I see my own thinking, others think the way I do. I realize I'm not off the wall. A mainstream. Yes, who else wanted to say something?
No, it's too disturbing. And everything that was said today is extremely disturbing. And I question the Jewishness
of the Satmar. I don't think they're Jewish. They got the garb, but that's about it. What was God doing in 48? Sleeping? He didn't know that the state was going to develop? The whole thing is sickening.
That's what Rabbi Rubin and I both stress. I hit the nail on the head, I think. Even allowing that there's a...
The Rabbi says, don't be prejudiced. Listen to what I'm saying. But he's prejudiced every letter and point that he makes.
You may be absolutely...
It's sickening.
Yeah, it may be absolutely correct, but if we're doing the history of Torah in the Western world, you can't skip over Satmar. And
right.
There are hundreds of thousands.
The non-Jewish Jews.
And okay, you want to put it that way. I hope that these lectures are having a little influence. V'day l'chakima b'remisa. Okay? I don't want to go beyond that. But that's why I want to present Satmar as he really thought. I don't want to present them as Rakefet would like him to be. But I understand your frustration. And believe me, you don't know the Atmos Nefesh I've had. Forget about Satmar. Have you ever spoken to a Messianic Lubavitcher? You understand? Boy, oh boy, the Atmos Nefesh, what they're doing to the Rebbe's memory. And they're still around. You know, I hope with the passage of time, it will be ameliorated. But we Jews, what can we do? I'm Kishay Oref. It's difficult. I'm out of the rabbinate. But believe me, I think back to the rabbinate and the problems. Yeah, today I would be wise enough to handle some of the problems I had when I was a kid in my 20s. But I don't want to be back in the rabbinate. That's all I can say.
We have so many enemies. We have so many sonim, and then we have our own enemies that make it even worse.
You don't have to tell me about Satmar. You don't have to tell me about the magic.
They're not the only ones. You know it, and I know it.
You know what it did to me. You know what it did to me to see Rav Malkiel Cutler demonstrate with the Satmarov against Bahagan Ali Yisrael. And Moshe Meiselman showed up. Wow! I don't want to start maledicting and cursing, but I'm one step away. And this is the Rub's heritage, and this is Rav Malkiel Cutler, that is Zayda Rav Aaron Cutler, my Rebbe. I learned in Lakewood, and I was close to Rav Aaron in Borough Park, and I knew Rav Aaron, and I know his family here in Israel, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's family. Rav Aaron, you know what he suffered from Satmar? He cried. How many Mechalalei Shabbos there are because of Satmar? They refused to vote in the Israeli elections. Agudah didn't have enough seats to have real tremendous influence. Had they had more influence, more schools, more Chinuch Atzmai, more Sfati kids would have been Shomer Torah and Mitzvah. All right, and then his Einikel goes and demonstrates with the Satmar against Svag and Ali Israel. I don't want to say another word, but I'll get too excited and I'll tell stories and who is he, what is he, and you stand with the Satmar, Shem Yerachem. Okay, thank God the Pashtun.
Rabbi, one thing, I just was at Mizrahi, I picked up the latest issue, so I have to compliment you, it's a big spread.
Do me a favor, see that, tell them to get some issues over here to Gris, we should be able to give it out on Sunday. Okay?
It's all stacked. I'll pick up a few more.
Okay, it should be here Sunday to give out. That's not my writing. It's they came to interview me. You remember, when anyone wants to interview me, I pulled the shtick with Ami Magazine too. By the way, with Ami Magazine, my wife is still mad at me. How do you let yourself be interviewed for a magazine which is against Kol HaTorah Kula? Women don't exist. It's a sickening thing not to have pictures of women. And you're making a statement that every male is a sexual fiend and every woman is a sexual siren. That's a terrible, terrible statement. Now we have to learn how to live with women with all their frumkeit and no pictures. Wait till you hear next time I give a regular share Sunday, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. With all their so-called frumkeit, take a look at the scandals we have had. Lo aleinu. So please don't tell me Waldern, and don't tell me this one and that one, that tzaddikim, they don't look at pictures of God have mercy. Anyway, but this time my wife should be happy because the Mizrahi magazine, I trust, has pictures of women, so it's not going against Sarah Rivka, Rucka, Voleya, and all that we have in the Torah. I want to thank everyone for honoring me with their presence, and we will continue the Kavadah L'Tiferet. By the time it's all over, I hope we will have had a lot of influence and many more religious Zionists in the world. Eretz Yisrael, Lam Yisrael, Lapi Torah Yisrael. And Nachum, thanks for telling me that the issue appeared. But what I said was, you want to interview me, you have to come to class. So remember a few years ago, there was a whole delegation here from Bris sitting in the class to hear the shiur. Then they interviewed me for Ami. They evidently felt I was worthy of being interviewed after the class. And the same thing with the Mizrahi magazine. The editor, Rabbi Mushel, came to class, sat here, becovered a real student, and he did an article. I hope it is lecovered a little ferret. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Thank you so, so much. Bruchim to you.